This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
He further pointed out that they also agreed to form a government of independent technocrats led by a prime minister.
That's Mohamed Al-Amin reporting from Khartoum. Details next also. More than 100 migrants in sinking vessels in the Mediterranean have been rescued by international aid groups. Zimbabwe's second largest city is without water. And a Kenyan court has handed down long prison sentences for three men connected to the deadly 2015 assault on Garissa University. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, talks in Sudan between the military and civilians over the handover of power since the ousting of President Omar al-Bashir have made a breakthrough after months of marathon efforts from regional and international envoys and mediators. Mohamed Al-Amin reports from Khartoum.
Sudan's ruling Transitional Military Council and the Forces for Freedom and Change Opposition Alliance have reached an agreement on sharing power during a transitional period before general elections after 3 years, African Union mediator Mohamed Hassan Lepad said at a press conference in Khartoum early Friday. The two sides have agreed to share power for 3 years with the formation of a sovereignty council that will be chaired by rotation between the military and civilians, Lepad said. He further pointed out that they also agreed to form a government of independent technocrats led by a prime minister. For his part, the TMC deputy chairman, Mohamed Hamdan, also known as Himeti, has welcomed the agreement, stressing that the TMC is fully committed to implement it. He further emphasized the Transitional Military Council would work in partnership with the opposition alliance to widen the agreement and allow the representation of the entire Sudanese people in the transitional period. You would like to ensure all the political stakeholders, including the other political parties, the armed movements, and all those who participated in the Sudanese revolution, from the youth, women, and others, that no one will be excluded. All of them will be represented, he assured. Meanwhile, opposition alliance leading member and chairman of the Sudanese Congress Party, Omar Al-Digir, has congratulated the Sudanese people for the agreement, considering it as a solid base for the prosperity of the nation. After long 30 years of the bad ruling of the ousted regime, the Sudanese people have proven that their freedom and democracy will win at end, he said. According to the agreement, the formation of the transitional parliament will be postponed for a maximum 90 days, and an independent and national investigation committee will be formed to probe the killing of civilians in Sudan. Mohamed Al-Amin for VOA News, Khartoum.
International aid groups have rescued more than 100 migrants from sinking vessels in the Mediterranean and are trying to get them to safe ports. The government of Malta today said it will take the 55 people rescued by a sailboat operated by the Italian charity Mediterranea yesterday. Italian Interior Minister Matteo Salvini has said the boat would not be allowed to dock in Italy. In return, the Maltese government says Italy will take 55 other migrants currently in Malta. Also, the German aid group CI says one of its ships today rescued 65 people found on a small boat without drinking water or communication equipment, about 55 kilometers off the coast of Libya. The CI group says it has tried to contact the Libyan authorities to return the migrants there, but has gotten no response. On Wednesday, another small boat carrying migrants from Libya to Europe sank, and more than 80 people are missing or dead. Three were rescued off Tunisia. Earlier this week, we brought you part one of a report about migrants in Libya trying to get to Europe. Today, we bring you the second part of the story. Alawiya was pregnant when she left Sudan hoping to go to Europe. Her home in Darfur was burned to the ground three times, and her husband, Ahmed, decided they should try for a future in Europe. Now she lives in Libya, among thousands of other travelers trying to catch a boat across the sea. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from Tripoli that the journey so far has been harrowing.
Alawiya was pregnant when she fled Sudan last year. Her house had been burned three times, and her husband, Ahmed, decided they may have better chances in Europe. Now she lives in a schoolhouse turned camp with other people from Sudan, Eritrea, and other countries. They all fled wars, extreme poverty, or other disasters, and all were displaced again in April when war broke out in Libya. The International Organization for Migration says so far this year, nearly 40,000 people have tried to cross the Mediterranean Sea to get to Europe. Only a few thousand have made it, and more than 550 people have died. But for Alawiya, the sea doesn't seem nearly as dangerous as her journey so far. She says soon after she crossed the border into Libya with her husband and two daughters, militants imprisoned them, burned and beat her husband, and stole their money. Alawiya was raped multiple times and miscarried her baby. Sometimes her husband was forced to watch. After they escaped, they found out Alawiya was pregnant again by one of the rapists. She says her husband wanted her to get an abortion, but she refused, and he left, angry. She doesn't know if he was kidnapped, killed, or just abandoning the family. When she went into labor, she couldn't afford a hospital and ended up delivering the child on the streets with only some cars parked around her for privacy. Almost 6 months after her son was born, she was settled in Tripoli with a small income from cleaning houses and a rented home. But in April, war broke out after Eastern forces declared their intention to take the Western capital by force. Now battles continue, but neither side appears to be winning. And once again, displaced people, like Alawiya, remain displaced. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Tripoli, Libya.
Three Libyan families residing in the United States have filed a lawsuit against Khalifa Haftar, commander of the Libyan National Army, accusing him of war crimes in a federal court. They say Haftar, who is an American citizen, has carried out an indiscriminate bombing campaign around Tripoli that has claimed the lives of their loved ones. Five House Democrats and two Republicans are calling on the Trump administration to investigate Haftar's conduct, which they say undercuts U.S. interests in Libya and could violate the laws of war. Representative Tom Malinowski, a Democrat from New Jersey, said Haftar's armed forces have shown a flagrant disrespect for human rights. President Trump, however, has expressed appreciation for Haftar's role in countering terrorism in Libya. Abdul Hakim Tunali, brother of Masdik Tunali, who was killed during Haftar's offensive on Tripoli, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shinawi about the lawsuit and the congressional call for allegations of war crimes in Libya.
First of all, because Haftar has attacked Tripoli to kill civilians and also to bomb randomly all areas in Tripoli. And in fact, he killed a lot of people there, so included my brother.
How did your brother become a victim of Haftar's campaign on Tripoli?
Actually, my brother was attempting to evacuate the area in Ain Zara, in southern Tripoli, with his comrades. And they made sure that no one was there because it was inhabited by women, children, and elderly. So they made sure after they evacuate the area They made sure that no one left behind. And when they were actually going back to flee the area, they bombed them, and my brother was killed.
So on what legal basis the lawsuit can be filed in an American district court?
Because my brother and the other family victims, they are Libyans. So the law allows them to file a suit against a U.S. citizen if they're attacked or been killed by a U.S. Citizen like Haftar now. He's a U.S. citizen, and he killed Libyans that live in Libya. So they have the right to do that.
So what's the next step after filing that lawsuit?
The next step is to serve the war criminal, Khalifa Haftar, the court summons.
How do you feel about congressional efforts to prosecute war crimes in Libya?
I actually feel very hopeful if they follow the lawsuit in Tripoli, because most of the people are victims because of the bombing occurring by the air jet and from the missiles and from other weapons. I believe that a congressman, Tom Lewinsky, is the right person to proceed for this case, because he stated that he will follow up with the Justice Department to open an investigation about the war crimes that Khalifa Haftar committed.
That was Abdul Hakim Tunali speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi about the lawsuit filed in U.S. court against the Libyan military commander Khalifa Haftar. Haftar has said he aims to capture control of Tripoli from the government of National Accord to be able to stabilize Libya under a single government. Haftar's forces back a parallel government in eastern Libya. The Liberian House of Representatives has passed a law that forbids all forms of domestic violence. The Domestic Violence Act of 2019 acknowledges that there is high incidence of domestic violence in the Liberian society, and the victims are among the most vulnerable population of the society. The passage of the bill coincided with a peaceful march by youth campaigners calling on the government to help curtail what they call a wave of rapes in the country. Moses Garezu reports from Monrovia.
For 5 years, the bill lingered in the legislature. Three joint committees, the Judiciary, Governance, and Gender, held numerous public hearings before reaching a consensus on the final draft. Grand Cru County Representative Fonati Kofa, chair of the Judicial Committee, told his colleagues it was necessary to pass the domestic violence bill.
So one of the things we included in there is that the Ministry of Gender has to engage in extensive civic education on what constitutes a violation, what constitutes domestic violence, what constitutes acts that would be unlawful under this bill.
However, some lawmakers asked for more time to review the bill after expressing reservations about its effect on the culture of Liberia. Among their concerns was the law's broad applications. Lofa County Representative Judy Weir, chair of the Gender Committee in the House of Representatives, explained how important the law would be in curtailing the wave of domestic violence in the country.
There is no perfect bill, but I think this bill is excellent because it addresses most of our issues, our day-to-day lives, so that we can live in the life free of violence.
In the end, all 41 lawmakers voted to pass the bill. One key omission in the Liberia Domestic Violence Act of 2019 is the much talked about female genital mutilation, or FGM. Representative Kofa said the FGM issue is undergoing joint review by all sectors since it is linked to customary law.
We are pleased that those who preside over our system of customary law are now moving into the realization that FGM as a practice has to end. There is nothing wrong if we were to give them a few more months to effect certain acts.
As the domestic violence bill was being debated, hundreds of young people marched through the streets of the capital to draw the attention of President George Weah's government to what they say is a wide range of rape and domestic violence issues in the country. They called on the government to fast-track prosecution of rape cases so that victims can get justice. The domestic violence act would now be forwarded to the Liberian Senate. If both houses of the legislature approve, it will be signed into law by President George Weah. Moses Gazio, VOA News, Monrovia.
Twenty past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. This week, a Kenyan court handed down long prison sentences for three men connected to the deadly 2015 assault on Garissa University. Gunmen who stormed the campus killed 148 people, most of them students. Survivors say they are still emotionally numb from the attack, but at least one is defiant to the attackers and what they represented. For VOA, Mohamed Yusuf reports.
On Wednesday, Kenya's chief magistrate court sentenced a Tanzanian man to life in prison in connection with the April 2, 2015 attack on Garissa University. Two Kenyans received sentences of 41 years. All three were convicted of playing supporting roles in the attack, for which Al-Shabaab militants claimed responsibility. The verdicts may be expected to bring closure to the survivors. However, two survivors who spoke to VOA say the sentences did no such thing. 25-year-old Elizabeth Wamboi survived the early morning attack. She continued her education afterward, but transferred to another university. Wamboi told VOA she has found it difficult to go on with her life, although she has forgiven those who killed her fellow students.
Only what I feel now is so much loss, but there's nothing I can do about it. I lost very close friends, a boyfriend, but I already forgave and moved on, because there's nothing much I can do.
Another survivor, Nicholas Odhiambo, says the verdicts had no effect on him.
I cannot say I was relieved because it had already happened and I lost a lot of my friends. There's nothing that could have been done to bring them back. I felt nothing, like, simply put, I felt nothing.
The university was closed for 9 months after the attack, but it reopened the following year and produced its first new graduates in June. Ahmed Ismail survived the deadly siege and graduated from the university. He says the students' will to get an education has defeated Al-Shabaab's terror threats.
Terrorism is a global problem. Just that Garissa University, we were unfortunate that they had targeted us. And you know, terrorists also have no rule. We have told terrorists, we've shown Kenya, we've shown Africa and the world at large that Garissa University will not fail irrespective of who attacks and who does what. We've carried ourselves from scratches, and now we are happy that we are graduates from the very university that terrorists wanted it closed.
The town of Garissa is about 200 kilometers from the Somali border and has in recent years been the site of sporadic attacks blamed on Al-Shabaab. The group has targeted Kenya for sending troops into Somalia to support the internationally recognized government. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
International charity Operation Smile is helping Malawians with cleft lips and palates get rid of the shame and embarrassment stemming from their condition. The U.S.-based charity has so far given free surgeries to more than 1,000 cleft patients in Malawi and is working on reducing a shortage of local surgeons who perform corrective surgeries. Lamek Masina reports from Zomba, Malawi.
Agnes Chiwochari caused her sharp reaction when she gave birth last year to a son with a cleft lip. Chiwochari says she was devastated and wondered why she gave birth to such a child. She asked herself what the hell happened to him to make him look like this. In her home village, people spread a rumor that her child's cleft lip was from a botched backstreet abortion. Others accused Chiwocha of using contraceptives that deformed her baby. Chiwocha says she told them that this is not because of contraceptives. She says, "How could I take contraceptives if I had another child? I told them that this is how God created him." the charity Operation Smile says cleft lips and palates are the world's third most common birth defect, one out of 750 births. Operation Smile gives free corrective surgeries to those who have the condition. In Malawi, the group has performed 1,000 operations in 7 years, but relies on foreign doctors because few local plastic surgeons are available. Ibrahim Ntalika is a program manager for Operation Smile Malawi.
We have only two plastic surgeons that volunteer to work with us, that can do this and volunteer to work with us.
People born with a cleft may have difficulty with speech and eating. They also face cruel treatment and discrimination, like what James Rice faced. Rice says his aunt insulted him a lot. He says she told him right to his face that if he had been born when she was there, she would have thrown him into the toilet. But those who receive the surgery have reason and the ability to smile. Agnes Chuocha is one of them. Chuocha says now those who used to insult her will be very much ashamed once they see her child, because the child they used to laugh at has been operated on. They will not laugh at them again, she says. The smiles are spreading to James Rice as well. He says now he will be able to do everything without any problem and will not be ashamed as before. Also, he will be free to tell others who have cleft to come out into the open and have their defect repaired. Operation Smile estimates about 3,000 Malawians still suffer from cleft lips or palates. To tackle the problem, the group is also training local doctors to perform the reconstructive surgery. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Zomba, Malawi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wojtek Zorniak, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.